Welcome to the show. We got a great guest lined up today on the People Speak Radio Show here on BBS Radio. And the website, by the way, is thepeoplespeakradio.net. Our guest this evening is Jerry Smith. And this, of course, is your host, Charles Giuliani. Jerry Smith is the author of a very interesting book, well, several books, actually, but the one we'll be talking about tonight is Weather Warfare. As well as an author, he's a lecturer, an environmentalist. He's with Adventures Unlimited Press, which are the distributors and publishers of some very interesting off-the-beaten-track books dealing with all kinds of subjects, politics, science, history, you name it. And he'll be talking more about that later. But here he is tonight to talk about weather warfare. So with no further ado, let me introduce Mr. Smith. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Charles. Good to be with you again.
Yeah, glad to have you. Yeah, we were just talking before the show how I've interviewed Mr. Smith on numerous occasions in the past on other shows. But here we are again to talk about this subject that amazingly most people not only are not aware of, but in most circles today, even though this is now public knowledge and admitted and discussed even on government websites, most people still are not only oblivious to this, but you mention it, and they kind of give you the hairy eyeball, like you're crazy, and you know, have antennas sticking out of your head. But unfortunately, this is a reality, isn't it?
Quite so. Quite so. There's a couple of areas I could elaborate on. I'm not quite sure where you want to go.
Well, let's start talking about, I think everybody's aware of, you know, cloud seeding. That's an old, rather primitive technology that's been around for quite some time and involves, you know, dropping dry ice in the air and, you know, having it fall back as rain. But what we're dealing with here goes far beyond that, doesn't it? We're talking stuff that can be controlled from the ground. With high-tech facilities such as what we have up, you know, up in Alaska, HAARP. That's something I'm sure you're going to want to be elaborating on. But when would you say that the more high-tech weather modification had begun?
Wow, there are a lot of different technologies in use, and curiously, this thing goes back 130 years. The first attempts to apply science to make rain artificially actually go back almost to the American Civil War. During the Civil War, it was noted that great battles were often followed by great rainstorms, and there were a number of theories as to what this was about. Today we know that the cause was the smoke and dust formed what are called nucleating particles. That is, they are airborne particles that water vapor attaches itself to, and the water vapor grows around this particle to become large enough to become a raindrop and fall as rain.
Right.
This is the basis of cloud seeding, is to inject nucleating particles into the clouds. That technology was developed in 1947 by Dr. Bernard Vonnegut, the little brother of famed novelist Kurt Vonnegut Jr. And that technology is the backbone of weather modification technologies around the world today. It is the most common. And what Dr. Vonnegut discovered was that silver iodide is extremely water-friendly, that water loves this stuff and attaches itself to it very readily, so that you get large clumps of moisture turning into raindrops very quickly. So you get a lot of bang for your buck on this. The United States military jumped on it and used this technology during the Vietnam War. Operation Popeye was an attempt to extend the monsoon season over Southeast Asia by cloud seeding over the Ho Chi Minh Trail in hopes of turning the Viet Cong resupply route into a hopeless quagmire of mud. This first reached public consciousness in 1971 in Jack Anderson's syndicated column. A few months later, in 72, Senator Claiborne Pell, Democrat, Rhode Island, began an investigation in the Senate. And Pell pulled in then-Secretary of Defense Melvin Laird and grilled him about this. And Laird lied to Congress. Laird said, oh, no, no, this is all nonsense. It's just science fiction. Of course we're not doing that. Well, 2 years later, a private letter from Laird got leaked to the press in which he admitted that Operation Popeye was real and had been ongoing. Mm-hmm. And Pell reconvened his investigation. Unfortunately, Laird had left as the head of the Department of Defense and was working as a private lawyer to Richard Nixon, who was fighting for his political life in the aftermath of the Watergate break-ins. But Pell did get the Pentagon to agree to secret closed-door sessions. And therein they admitted that Operation Popeye was real. It had been ongoing from 1966 to 1972. There had been at least 2,600 flights dropping more than 47,000 units of cloud seeding material over four countries, North and South Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, the latter two in violation of international law, at an operational cost of about $21.6 million. And that was back when $1 million actually was a fair chunk of change. Pell was shocked and demanded to know what else the DOD was working on, and they trotted out a literal laundry list of insane, unthinkable things that they were working on, including intentionally melting polar ice and intentionally thinning out the ozone layer over the enemy so as to sicken the enemy populace through increased exposures to solar radiation. This led Pell to become what today would be called a poster child for a movement to create an international treaty banning weather as a weapon. And that treaty came into effect in 1978. That treaty is Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. And this treaty not only bans using weather as a weapon, it also bans creating tsunamis, earthquakes, setting off volcanoes, etc. And a number of people have commented that they wouldn't have made a law against doing it if they didn't have the technology or didn't think they would soon have the technology to do that.
And, of course, since then there's been other legislation, like Kucinich, of course, is introduced.
And right now in Congress, a few years ago, Kay Bailey Hutchinson introduced a bill to create a Weather Modification Advisory Board. Weather Modification Research and Technology Transfer Authorization Act of 2005. Mm. That's Weather Modification Research. That bill made it through committee, got onto the Senate calendar, and then never came up for a vote. There was too many people in opposition to it. But it got reintroduced in 07 as the Weather Mitigation Research and and Technology Transfer Authorization Act. They changed just the word modification to mitigation to ride on the coattails of the global warming brouhaha. And that one is percolating its way through Congress right now. And mainly what that bill would do is create a board that would pull together all the scientists and agencies working on weather modification, get them all together, find out what they all know, and then look at what looks like promising research and throw federal dollars at that research. Now, this is a reconstruction of something that happened before the before the international treaty banning weather as a weapon was signed onto. In 1976, there was the National Weather Modification Policy Act of 1976, and that created essentially the same sort of board that looked that tried to pull together everything that was known about weather modification at the time, and start funneling federal funds into it. Now,
there was also NMOD too, right? The UN.
Exactly. NMOD is short for environmental modification, environmental modification includes modifying the weather and being able to do these other grand scale things like modifying ocean currents and that sort of thing. So,
which makes you wonder, you know, since they admit that they have this technology, I mean, you had former Secretary of Defense William Cohen admitting that they can modify storms, divert them, volcanoes.
Right. The book begins with the quote from Cohen. And
yeah.
Cohen was the Secretary of Defense, and he was speaking in his official position. So you can take his statement as a position of the United States government.
Yeah,
and
it's on the Pentagon's website.
Yeah, it is on the Pentagon's website. And he was speaking at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy in 1997. And, and then he said, others are engaging, even in an eco-type of terrorism, whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts.
So this isn't conspiracy theory, folks. We're quoting from high-ranking government officials who admit this.
Right. So I begin the book with that statement, and the book is a 400-page examination of whether or not he was speaking sooth. And I concluded, and I believe most of my readers would conclude, that he was telling the truth, that others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism, whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, etc.
I mean, we could go on all night just citing authoritative sources. You know, you get the China Lake website, which develops weapon systems for the Navy. They admit they've been doing this since the 40s. Tesla, of course, was one of the ones who developed some of the early phases of this technology. He didn't intend it to be used for less than wholesome purposes, but nevertheless, you know, he laid the groundwork for what has become weather modification. But what's interesting is that admission by Cohen tells us that they can divert storm systems. So we'd have to ask the question, before addressing them creating storms, if they have the ability to divert them, why aren't they doing it?
Well, who says they're not?
But I'm saying to divert them so they don't do damage. You know, why aren't they, like with Katrina, if Katrina was an accident.
Okay, the problem is that there are what are called the feedbacks. There are the unintended and unexpected consequences of modification. I believe that they are indeed using the HAARP array to bend weather over North America to produce a stationary high-pressure dome over the southeastern United States during hurricane season, which has effectively prevented hurricanes from coming on shore for 3 years now. The 2000, if you remember 2005, Katrina, etc., worst hurricane season ever, greatest number of hurricanes to make landfall, greatest number of Category 4 and 5 storms to make landfall in a single year. And all the weather pundits were saying 2006 was going to be even worse. And then they ramp up HAARP and complete HAARP just in time for the 2006 hurricane season. And what happened in 2006? Nothing.
Not
a single hurricane came on shore. But there was this high-pressure dome parked over the southeastern United States. And it acted like a rubber bumper on a pinball machine, and every hurricane, like a pinball, hit it and bounced off safely back out to sea. And so why are they not saying, hey, we saved America? Well, what happened under that dome was intense heat, droughts, people dying from the heat, wildfires, property being destroyed, crops being destroyed. If they admitted to having created it, they would then be liable for to be sued for all that damages.
Yeah.
And see, this is the problem is that whenever you start meddling, you may get a benefit here, but you may get a problem down the road. Another clear example of this is China right now. If you were paying attention this year, you know that the Summer Olympics was held in China during the rainy season, and China promised perfect weather for the Olympics and delivered. And how did they make that promise? They had 37,000 people working full-time in weather management.
Yeah,
and they bragged about this.
Yeah.
I mean, this was international news in the 8 or 10 months of run up before the Olympics. The head of the Chinese government department running the weather modification program went on, had several press briefings and was seen on international news promising perfect weather because she has an army of weather modifiers out there working. Now look at China has been modifying the weather over China for more than a decade. And who's downwind of China? North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
North Korea has been in a drought for over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
China has been stealing North Korea's rain.
Yeah.
And winning a double benefit from it because they get the rain at home to use on their crops, which they then get to sell to the North Koreans who can't grow their own crops.
Amazing. This is something Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about in his 1970 book, Between Two Ages, that nations in the future would be able to engage in weather modification and use it as a weapon to destroy the crops of a rival nation.
Mm-hmm.
And
A number of people have looked at the possibility. And like I said, this actually goes back to the 1880s. The very first patent granted by the United States Patent Office for artificial rainmaking was granted to a United States general. The United States Army has been intimately involved in this literally since day one. A point I wanted to make back about the K. Bailey Hutchinson bill is that it creates this earlier board from the 70s, and in the 1970s, the federal government was spending between $40 and $140 million a year on developing environmental modification technologies and had over 700 degreed scientists working in federal programs on the subject. And then in 78, Uncle Sam signed the NMOD treaty, and the federal budget went to zero, and those jobs all vanished. And what happened to them was they went to, and I know you've heard this phrase before, civilian contractors.
Mm-hmm.
It all went off the federal budget and out of congressional scrutiny.
Right, off the radar. Yeah.
You know, proof of this is easy to come by. For example, the largest private company engaged in weather modification today is, oddly enough, Weather Modification Incorporated of Fargo, North Dakota. Weather Modification Incorporated of Fargo, North Dakota is a civilian contractor who has been working for governments, state, county, federal, regional governments across North America and around the world. They have more than 20 foreign nations as their clients, as well as a lot of U.S. State and county and civilians. Among the things they do is snowpack enhancement for Sun Valley, Idaho. In 2005, one of the senior scientists at Weather Modification Incorporated went on Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM radio show and outed himself as having been one of the senior scientists in Operation Popeye, a direct link from military using weather as a weapon to civilian contractors developing and using the technology today.
That's a nice fascist.
Working for Uncle Sam off budget.
Yeah, nice fascist blend, once again, of big money and big government. Now, we talked about the possibility of this having been used, you know, over the past few years to divert hurricanes, and we certainly saw that in 2006, like you said. I believe also 2007 we didn't see anything.
2007, again, the high-pressure dome was parked over the southeastern United States. It was again in 2008. It was smaller in 2007 than it had been in 2006, and much smaller in 2008 than it had been in 2007. In 2006, the weather pundit said, well, it was because of El Nino. Well, in 2007 there was no El Nino, and it still happened. And this year there was none, and it still happened. One of the curious things, and this is sort of adding a conspiracy theory on top of a conspiracy theory, in 2007, the smaller dome allowed moisture coming up from the Yucatan, it's called, the locals call it the Yucatan Express. Just like in California, when there's a flow of moist air from Hawaii, it's called the Pineapple Express. And the Yucatan Express flows around the western side of the Gulf of Mexico, bringing much-needed moisture into the southern United States. Well, in 2006, it didn't happen. It just didn't get through. 2007, it got stopped over Texas and flooded Texas. Now, curiously, the point where it was stopped and flooding had a benefit for the government, in that that area is where they want to build the NAFTA corridor. That's where they want to build a 16-lane wide freeway up the center of America to move goods out of Mexico into America and Canada. In 04 or 05, they expressed that the Texas government expressed they wanted to use eminent domain to take the property. And there was a lot of hue and cry from citizens who did not want to have their property stolen and turned into a freeway. And the state legislature passed a law making it much more difficult for the state government to use eminent domain. And then we had the flooding right over the spot, flooding out the spots where they want to put the freeway.
It's very convenient. Nature and just has a way of cooperating with the government.
And then this year, they allow a couple of hurricanes to travel up that corridor. Again, very conveniently.
Well, I understand that the tornado that hit in Des Moines was also part of the area where they want to put the highway through.
Yeah, Des Moines is one of the terminals on the on the NAFTA corridor. It's where the big road is supposed to split into three other roads.
It was also an area, by the way, where a lot of the nation's ethanol plants were located, got wiped out.
Another convenient for the oil moguls who run the Bush administration.
You know, I want to talk some more about other sinister applications, quite obvious ones of this technology. But before we do that, for the listeners that aren't familiar, I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, how the technology actually works as far as HAARP goes, and does this involve satellite technology. Before we do that, though, I just want to mention real quick for our listeners, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment for our guest, you can do so internationally by calling toll-free 877-489-6350-6350. In the United States or Canada, toll-free at 888-228-4494. And again, you can call in with your questions or comments for the guest. I'm also taking, of course, text questions through palktalk.com, where we're simulcasting the show this evening. So you can send your text to Mike, Peace Lover, and he can send those to me in a private message, and I'll read them over the air. Yeah, so let's talk about the technology, how it actually works. You know, how do you move a storm or create one in the first place or feed it energy? What exactly are the – this, of course, again, goes beyond cloud seeding.
You know, I have been struggling to understand this for a decade now. I found myself writing about something that I was technically completely knew nothing about. And so I've been educating myself in this subject, in the process educating the reader. And so I have kept it very simple because I only understand, you know, the fundamentals of it. So I can't really give you a real technical nuts and bolts of how this stuff works. I can outline a few of the things I have sussed out, and it's really up to the listener and the reader to take it from there and do their own due diligence. You mentioned HAARP. I mentioned HAARP. Let's talk a little bit about HAARP. HAARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. It is a field of antennas on the ground in southeastern Alaska, so linked together as to work as one giant antenna. And it is today the world's largest radio broadcasting station. But it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It uses a unique, patented ability to focus the frequency energies coming out of the field and inject them into a spot at the very top of the atmosphere in a region called the ionosphere. Now, to give you an idea of what we're talking about here, the effective radiated power of HARP is 3.6 million watts. The largest legal AM radio station in the U.S. is 50,000 watts. HARP is 72,000, 50,000-watt radio stations injecting their full effective radiated power into a spot about 12 miles across by about 2.5 miles deep by about 90 miles up. Now, as you can imagine, what that does is it heats that region rather severely. Indeed, HARP is a type of an instrument called an ionospheric heater. Now, there are about 20 other ionospheric heaters on the planet, but none of them have the unique patented ability to focus the energy coming out of the field. So they do generate a lot of radio waves, and they do heat up the ionosphere, but nothing like what HARP can do.
And also its location is key as well, because a lot of the natural magnetic field lines meet up there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, and it clearly is grew out of the Star Wars program, and if there had been a fleet of enemy ICBMs coming towards America, coming over Alaska is certainly one of the primary routes.
Mm-hmm.
So what HARP does as an ionospheric heater is it heats this region by several thousand degrees to the point where the molecules of the atmosphere are literally blown apart. Now, when you break up a molecule, that it gives off a packet of energy, and in that packet of energy is included a stream of ELF, extremely low-frequency radio waves, which penetrate deep into the Earth and deep into the sea. And the U.S. Navy admits to having used HARP for about 15 years now to communicate with deeply submerged submarines. Now, the other side of this that they try not to mention is that when you blow the molecules apart, you convert the atmosphere into a plasma, which is an electrically charged gas. And because
mm-hmm.
it's at the top of the atmosphere, that gas goes out into space. As a side note, this means every time we use HARP, we throw away a chunk of our atmosphere, which
mm-hmm.
frankly I don't think is a good idea. So when this plasma goes out into space, it keeps going until it runs into something to stop it, which is the magnetic lines of force of the Earth's magnetic field. And it gets trapped between these magnetic lines of force and spreads out, forming a shield. This electrically charged shield is such that anything passing through it, anything electrical passing through it, like a spy satellite or an incoming ICBM, would be disrupted, damaged, or destroyed by it. So it is clearly a ground-based Star Wars weapon system.
Right.
Whether they could effectively use it as one is something else again. There's some question as to how long the field would have to be running in order to be able to generate enough plasma to take out an ICBM, since an ICBM can go from launch to impact in 17 minutes, HARP probably would not be of any use against ICBMs, but they certainly could fry out a few spy satellites.
Sure. There's all kinds of sinister
right. Now,
applications.
There are a lot of other possible applications. As I mentioned, it generates this stream of ELF. And
I tell you what, we got to cut to a break. Hold that thought. I want to pick up when we get back. But another thing I want to mention quick, another possible, perhaps unexpected or maybe even undesired side effect of this probably is a lot of the whale beachings we've been seeing. Whales, of course, use radio waves to navigate, and if they're generating these powerful radio waves, it would offset their navigation.
Well, I'll disagree with that when we come back from the break.
Oh, really? You don't see that
yeah.
as a...
No,
okay.
it's sonar that's doing it. It's audio, not radio.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, we'll pick up there when we get back, folks. We'll have a short break, and we'll see you in a couple minutes.
We used to write letters to each other a lot.
And it was intimidating to talk to him sometimes because he just seemed so isolated by himself.
She started talking about how she wishes that her life was over and she wishes that she was never born.
So I knew he had depression, but I didn't know it was that far.
Said something to me about killing himself.
Tell somebody, tell an adult, counselor, parent, whatever.
It's a hard situation because you do risk making that person very angry and losing their friendship.
It would have been horrible for me if she never talked to me again, but I'd live with it because I know she'd be alive.
definitely worth getting help, even if you think you're going to lose a friendship, because it's better to lose the friendship than the actual friend.
Suicide is one of the leading causes of death among teens. For more information, contact the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, 888-333-AFSP, or online at afsp.org.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the silver, by the relief fountain, I saw my people.
Okay, we're back. Once again, this is Charles Giuliani, your host. We have for our guest this evening, Jerry Smith. He's the author of Weather Warfare. And just for clarification purposes, before the break, we were talking about, you know, the difference between the sonar and radio waves, and how, you know, HARP at least is not the cause of the whale beachings. Did you want to elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, I did. The problem is the new generation in sonars, and sonar is an acoustic. It's an audio signal. And it is, these new sonars are impossibly, inconceivably loud. The decibel level is in the millions of decibels. In one experiment, a submarine off the California coast outside of San Diego pinged, and it was heard clearly at Diego Garcia, an island in the Indian Ocean on the opposite side of the planet. If you've ever stood at the end of a runway and had a 747 land or take off over your head, multiply that by 100,000, and that's how loud this damn thing is.
Wow.
And so the marine mammals are literally climbing out of the ocean to get out of the noise. I spoke in the Bahamas in 2000, and there was a literal wave of beachings of every kind of marine mammal, manatees, dolphins, whales, the whole nine yards, were climbing up on the beaches of the Bahamas, and the Bahamanians were rather upset about it. And one of the things they discovered was that all of these animals had their internal cavities were hemorrhaging. The acoustic waves were reverberating inside their bodies and blowing their bodies apart.
Wow.
The Bahamanian government asked the U.S. Navy to knock it off, and the Navy told them to stop it.
Yikes. Yeah, mankind is kind of the opposite of King Midas. Everything he touches turns to mud.
Yes. Yes.
And like you there's the ignorance factor affecting things, seemingly for a positive reason and having negative side effects. But then, of course, there's the planned negative consequence.
Right. And then you have the arrogance factor.
Yeah.
The military and science, scientists are among the most arrogant people on the planet. and in many ways, among the most ignorant people on the planet. Scientists are ultimate specialists. They know one thing really, really, really well and haven't a clue about everything else.
Right.
And they tend to be there's herd group think in every human activity, and the scientific herd think among its facets is focus on the work. Don't think about what the work is going to do.
Hmm.
You get the idea, and you work on the idea and
prove
the idea out. And it's irrelevant what the idea will end up doing.
Yeah.
And so the arrogance factor is often just amazing.
They're very intimidating to those that don't agree with them.
On a related field, so you can see what I'm talking about here, we have nuclear power. And nuclear power has a bad genie that won't go into a bottle, which is high radioactive waste. And when they started on nukes back 50 years ago, 60 years ago, it was thought, we have to solve this problem. And then they realized they had no solution to the problem, and there was no commercial company in America willing to build a power plant unless the government absolved them of any of the downside from it. And the government passed the Anderson Act. And the Anderson Act is a lovely piece of legislation which says that if a nuclear power plant blows up, if it injures, harms anyone or anything, the aggregate suit against the power company that built and operated the plant is $100,000. If if Three Mile Island were to go China syndrome and wipe out the northeastern seaboard of the United States, Con Edison would only have to pay $100,000 total in damages for it.
Wow.
It was once they passed the Anderson Act, then Westinghouse and General Electric and a couple of other companies jumped on the bandwagon and started building the nuclear plants, knowing that there was this problem of there is no solution to what to do with the high-level radioactive waste. But the arrogance was, it's going to be at least 30 years before we have to decommission a plant. It's going to be at least 30 years before we have to really deal with this stuff. And by then, we will have figured it out. And they just went forward with it with the blind arrogance of, we'll figure it out. We're smart enough.
Yeah.
Right. So here we are, here we are at the point where they've already spent $3 billion at Yucca Mountain trying to build a repository that will never hold anything. And they still haven't figured it out.
They get that degree going, and they become ultimate authorities. And
yeah,
you not only can't question them, but you're crazy if you do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's incredible. Well, yeah, in any field, you know, just about every field today is like
right.
that.
So back to where we were before we went to break.
Yeah.
I was talking about HARP, and I was covering some of the technicals on HARP, and I wanted to go into one of the areas that the area that really got my attention and got me focused on HARP and ultimately writing a book on HARP. And my book is HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. And I admit that book is mostly conjecture. It's mostly speculation in that I wrote it in 98, and they didn't complete HARP until 2005. So it was still under construction. And so we couldn't really know what they were doing with it, because they hadn't really done much with it yet.
Well, they had to use it for preliminary tests and so forth.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so
what I did is I went to the internet and got, you know, the first book on HARP was by Nick Begich and Gene Manning, Angels Don't Play This HARP. And it had ignited a firestorm of controversy on the internet. There were literally tens of thousands of postings all over the internet on this subject. And so I read through these things, and the fear and conjectures and wild ideas and conspiracy theories about what this thing might do. And then I educated myself in the subject enough to be able to get a bead on what the real possibilities of this thing were. And then we go to the speculation of, I asked myself, who would want to do that and why? And there were two major areas that come up. And the HARP array is built on a suite of patents. And that suite of patents expressly states that this technology could be used to manipulate the weather, and gives several different ideas of how they think this technology could be used to move the jet stream and otherwise affect the weather, and so that's one side of HARP is it's right there in the patents that HARP can affect the weather. And then the other side is that the purpose of HARP is to generate this ELF. HARP is a type of device called an ionospheric heater. There is an older ionospheric heater in Alaska called High Pass, and High Pass is operated by UCLA. And High Pass generated enough ELF to be able to use it in doing something called earth-penetrating tomography. And this is a brand new science. Earth-penetrating tomography did not exist before 1980, and it's been described as a dirt radar or like cat scanning the earth. With this ELF penetrating deep into the earth, it bounces back, so you can read the backflow like regular radar. And also, because it is a frequency, a tone, you can, if you get the right tone, you can get subsurface materials to vibrate at that tone. So if you know the tone, one of the ways they use earth-penetrating tomography to find oil fields is they inject the tone that oil vibrates at into the ground. And if there's oil there, it will vibrate and sing back. You know, like putting a tuning fork against the string of the guitar.
Yeah.
With High Pass, they generated enough ELF in the ionosphere, and they boiled the ionosphere enough to generate enough ELF to be able to map out an old mining tunnel underneath between them and Fairbanks, and they were very excited that they could use ionospheric heaters to locate and map out and eventually monitor underground bases. And they went to the United States Senate with this, and the United States Senate funded HARP to use earth-penetrating tomography to locate and monitor enemy underground bases for the manufacture and launch of weapons of mass destruction. And HARP was originally funded out of counterproliferation studies. Well, the curious thing is now they have it up and running. They've been at this thing for 15 years, and there's nowhere in the literature do they ever mention earth-penetrating tomography. From 1996 on, it's gone from all the HARP documents, which leads me to ask, are they thumbing their nose at the U.S. Senate? You know, they were paid for to do something, and they said, no, we don't feel like doing that.
Mm.
Or did they actually develop this technology and get so good at it they don't want the world to know what they can do with it and are just staying deliberately mum on the subject?
I'm afraid the latter is probably most likely the case.
Right.
This is sad. This happens so often where technology like this is used by the military for destructive purposes.
You know, one of the things we know is that after 9/11, HAARP was up and running at full power for about 31 days. Now, it may have been sending signals to the submarine fleet, or it may have been using earth-penetrating tomography to map out Tora Bora and try to figure out what cave Osama bin Laden was hiding in.
Mm.
And we probably won't know for another 25 years when that gets declassified.
So, but it was up before and then continued thereafter for 30 years?
As you mentioned, the developmental prototype was put up in, I think it was 93. They had a small version of HAARP that has been up and running since 93 or 95.
I think
it's 95. And that's what they've been communicating with deeply submerged submarines with, and possibly doing earth-penetrating tomography and God knows what else with it. As I was saying, the thing that really struck me is that this ELF that they use to do the earth-penetrating tomography has a very serious potential downside, in that this ELF is at extremely low-frequency radio waves are at exactly the same frequency that the human brain works at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well established that the human brain is a radio transceiver and is affected by outside radio signals. And my first thought was, my God, if these guys have no clue what they're doing, they could accidentally and inadvertently create mental dysfunction across a huge chunk of the planet without having a clue they're doing it.
Or maybe not accidentally.
And if they do know what they're doing, it could be the ultimate mind control device.
Yeah. Well, we do know about MKUltra.
Exactly.
The CIA had used,
I have studied MKUltra since 1976. That really was the basis of my understanding of the HAARP system, was coming out of 20 years of researching the CIA and mind control programs.
Wow. I mean, this gets scary. This is beyond Orwell.
It is very scary. It is very scary, if they're really doing it. I have since decided they're not. And curiously, Nick Begich and I have traded positions. At the beginning, Nick Begich was convinced HAARP was a ground-based Star Wars weapon system, and I was convinced that HAARP was a global mind control system. We have now completely reversed positions, in which he thinks it is a mind control program, a mind control device, and I think it's a ground-based Star Wars weapon system. And a whole
well, why not
more.
Both?
Yeah, exactly. It could
have multiple.
It really is, you know, and it's hard to know. It's hard to know what's going on at HAARP, and even the guys who are at HAARP, I don't think they know what's going on. I think it's a compartmentalized operation.
Yeah, they do that with all government agencies. Yeah.
You know, the work on the ground at HAARP in Alaska is being done by students and professors at the University of Alaska, but the system is set up so that the scientist running the experiment can be anywhere in the world and using, you know, the internet. The ARPANET to run HAARP remotely. And so you have the students and professors who turn on the stuff and watch the dials and gauges, make sure everything is working, and have no idea what it's doing.
Mm-hmm. Or they might have access to it certain times of the day, and other scientists use it for other things other times, and they don't know what they're doing with it. You know,
exactly.
They think it's the same thing they're doing. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They do this stuff all the time. Unfortunately, time is really running away. We've only got about 10 more minutes or so. I wanted to go to some of the questions here that I'm getting in the text from Paltalk. This one is Judy in Alabama. She says, she asks, have any of the most recent devastating hurricanes in the Gulf been manipulated by man? And she lists, you know, Ike, Ivan, Katrina, Rita, if you wanted to comment on that.
As I repeatedly point out in the book, Weather Warfare, the Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, Mother Nature gives great credible deniability. It's very, very difficult to see a storm and determine whether the storm is natural or unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
If there are cloud-seeding planes up there doing their thing, you can go, well, okay, I can see that this storm front is being massaged by Weather Modification Incorporated. But if it's being done by some remember what Cohen said. Cohen said, others are engaging even eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. Mm-hmm. If they're using electromagnetic waves, radio waves, from a transmitter halfway around the globe to do this thing, we have virtually no way to determine who's doing what.
Mm-hmm.
There are some telltales. Again, the high pressure domes over the southeastern United States the last 3 years have been anomalous.
The
mainstream meteorologists cannot explain them. They don't make any sense. They do not follow any pattern. They do not follow. They've never happened before. So that in itself indicates that something unusual is taking place, and it might be unnatural.
Right.
But as to who the heck is doing it, your guess is as good as mine. I think that the circumstantial evidence points at HAARP, but that's a circumstantial evidence case that we don't have time to make at this point.
Right. One thing's for sure, we do know that this technology exists. We just don't know exactly, when and
right.
How.
Right. Now, if you go to, I believe it was April 2004, Scientific American, the great granddaddy of the American open scientific literature. Scientific American cover story was by a scientist, a civilian scientist under government contract, who had figured out how to control hurricanes. That was the lead article. We now know how to control hurricanes, at least in the lab. We have computer models. We have simulated control of hurricanes. We now are convinced we know how to do it. Now, there is, in the real world, there is Elate Technologies. Elate Technologies was a bureau, a government, a piece of the old Soviet Union government, that when the Soviet Union broke up, they spun themselves off as a for-profit company. And they are the official weatherman. They were the weather managers for Russia. Remember, at the beginning of this talk, I said how China had promised perfect weather for the Olympics. They were using the technologies developed by the Russians to keep it from raining on the May Day parade. And those Russians are Elate Technologies. In 1998, there were massive forest fires burning out of control in Southeast Asia, particularly Indonesia and Malaysia. And Elate Technologies went to those countries and said, we have the ability to create hurricanes on demand, and we can whoop up a big wind and blow out your forest fires. And Malaysia went for it. Malaysia ponied up a never-disclosed amount of money. The Russians whipped up their big wind, did indeed create what in that part of the world is called a cyclone, and the cyclone did indeed blow out the forest fires. It also flattened hundreds of villages and left thousands of people homeless. I think that's called collateral damage. Now, so the Russians have a technology for making what I call a big wind. We may have seen this used covertly elsewhere. Do you remember Gulf War I? It lasted, what was it, 56 hours? When we went into Gulf War II, the Allies expected to be in Baghdad by Wednesday. And what happened? The moment we launched, a big wind came up. The strongest winds ever recorded, the worst sandstorms in 100 years, and it nailed the Allied advance down for 3 weeks. I think there's a very good chance that Saddam Hussein went to his old friends, the Russians, and said, can you guys buy me some running time? And they came back with, how much cash do you have?
Well, I'll tell you, as far as Katrina goes, you're probably aware of this, but the CERI Institute, Center for Earthquake Research Information in Memphis, actually recorded extremely low frequency, note, ELF, vibrations of the Earth's crust as Katrina passed over. They said this is a new phenomenon, only seen once before, last year with Hurricane Charley. That's exactly what they use for weather modification technology, of course, as you've mentioned, ELF radiation.
Yes, yes. I think there's a very good chance. And also note that Katrina, literally moments before coming on shore, did an abrupt right turn and went 90 miles down the beach before coming on shore.
Right. Very suspicious.
That's never happened before. I mean, it may be natural, but it's never been seen before. Yeah. My guess is that we actually had two teams playing with Katrina. One team launched Katrina at New Orleans, and the other team got a hold of it and pushed it off at the last moment.
Interesting. Could be.
Now, who's who? I mean, we could be talking about the Russian government versus the American government, or we could be talking about the Yakuza.
Yeah,
I can never remember.
Well, I know one thing interesting. Bush, after touring the devastated area, said, "Wow, it looks like some secret, powerful weapon was unleashed here." Interesting comment.
Yes.
Hmm. Anyway, let's go to another question. We still have a couple more minutes left here. This is from Dan in Iowa. The next one is Mike in California. He says, you wrote a book called Secrets of the Holy Lance, The Spear of Destiny in History and Legend. And he asks, I was wondering if the lance actually existed and was endowed with any supernatural power. Kind of off the topic, but...
Oh, it's very off the topic, and it's a subject I really enjoy talking about. I really enjoyed writing that book, but my gosh, I in the few seconds we have,
yeah, that might take us away. Yeah,
that's
we can have you back on to talk about that.
Landmines I would fall into abruptly.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to have you back on. Let's go to Dan in Iowa. He says, "Has there been any congressional hearings or investigations on any of this, or all of them?" I guess that's essentially the question. Is there any investigations?
Yes, there has been a congressional interest over the years. The first was 1890. Congress authorized. There had been two patents granted, and Congress authorized the Agriculture Department to investigate. And the Agriculture Department spent a couple of weeks and about $20,000 investigating. Now, $20,000 doesn't sound like much today, but $20,000 in 1890 had the buying power of about $250,000 today. So this was a decent outlay. And that team concluded that under the right circumstances, rain could be artificially induced, which led to the wave of rainmakers of the 1890s. Congress has looked into it many times, and there have been a number of international treaties drawn up on the subject. And I think it was 1960. There was a flap over. Some cloud seeding was going on in Washington State that caused anomalous weather conditions in Canada, and the Canadians got pissed off about it, and the U.S. and Canada passed a law, passed a treaty, making it anybody on within 200 miles of the international border doing any sort of weather modification had to give full disclosure to the people on the other side of the border of what they were doing or planned to do.
So there you go, folks. There's been plenty. I tell you what, I hate to cut you off. We've really run out of time. But real quick, mention how they can get your books, Weather Warfare or your Heart book.
I'm Jerry E. Smith, Jerry with a J, J-E-R-R-Y-E-S-M-I-T-H. My website is jerryesmith.com, J-E-R-R-Y-E-S-M-I-T-H.com. There's a great deal of information about my books and the material in the book, so you can continue your research, and links to buying it from my publisher. You can also get it at Amazon.com for ridiculous discounts. You can get them at most bookstores. I really would like you to drop into my website and get a feel for the material and see if you can get it at your local bookstore, because that encourages them to shelve and reshelve the book so it gets more sales
right
down the road.
Exactly. Okay, thanks again, Jerry, for coming on. This great information. Wish I had some more time to spend with you, but maybe we'll have you on again sometime. We can talk about some of your other books.
Well, thank you, Charles. I enjoyed it, as always.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Take care. Okay, folks, that's it for tonight. Tomorrow's guest, we've got Nadia Hijab. I hope I didn't massacre her name there, H-I-J-A-B. She's with the Palestine Studies Institute, so you don't want to miss that. She'll be our guest on here tomorrow. And next week, of course, I'll be on again Monday night. My guest will be Jerry Spence. He was, of course, the attorney for the Ruby Ridge fiasco, the Randy Weaver family. So we'll be talking about that. So have a great week, folks, and we'll see you next week.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea by the relief of death, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.